We're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about something that was raised by National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair speaking to a Senate panel yesterday.
Economic crises increase the risk of regime-threatening instability if they are prolonged for a 1 or 2 year period. And instability can loosen the fragile hold that many developing countries have on law and order, which can spill out in dangerous ways into the international community.
Does financial instability mean political instability and, more than that, an increase in the possibility of things like terrorism? Joining us now is David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent of The New York Times and author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts on the Challenges to American Power. David Sanger, thanks for joining us.
Good to be back with you, John.
So what do you make of Dennis Blair? He's National Intelligence Director. He's laying out a pretty broad agenda and suggesting that instability economically is an opportunity for terrorists and people that want to destabilize the world. How does that work exactly?
Well, first, just step back and think about what a change this was. Dennis Blair was giving what's called the annual National Threat Assessment, an annual presentation in front of Congress about what are the major threats facing the United States, international threats. So from 2001 forward, we all knew what that was, John. It was terrorism, terrorism, and then terrorism. And all of a sudden you change administrations, and he's stepping up and saying, yeah, terrorism's a major issue, and we'll get on in a moment to what he said about al-Qaeda and the Taliban and so forth. But he said the number one issue for us here is that if you get a prolonged downturn, and it looks like this will be, it's the marginal countries that end up falling off the shelf, weak countries, and that makes them much more susceptible to all kinds of forces inside that can spill outside their borders. And, you know, we know this is true because even in good times, many of the countries that we're dealing with as our biggest problems are either failed states or near-failed states. Think Afghanistan, think Pakistan, you know, the list can go on. Think North Korea.
Well, let's take Afghanistan out of the picture for a minute, because I think it's a special case given what's happened since 2001, but I do want to return to it. I mean, we've seen the proliferation of failed states even during the prosperity of the last 8 years. Remember back then when there was prosperity? But take, for example, Congo and areas of Central Africa where there is profound instability. Certainly there is a moral argument for intervening to restore law and order, but it's not as though people in states like Congo and Rwanda and maybe parts of even Kenya are targeting the United States in a way that Americans would feel threatened by. Explain.
That's right. And, you know, that's why, you know, Afghanistan and Pakistan are high up on the list. But he linked this to an interesting point, and you hear this when you read media across the world. Let's face it, this crisis started here. Okay, I mean, that's just a fact. And, you know, we can argue about whether or not it started with bad lending in Florida and California or whether it started with bad judgments on Wall Street, but it started here. And think of the power of that message abroad. Why are we running out of food, water, whatever? Because the Americans messed up the global economy.
Oh, that's an interesting take. So really, it's a hearts and minds issue all of a sudden, and we've got some work to do in the new administration.
Well, it's a hearts and minds issue, but also if you're a terror group looking for advantage and looking to blame the big bad United States for something, they've been handed a great arguing point because we can't get back and say, well, no, actually, this didn't begin here because it did.
Hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that it started there with a intent to hurt anybody else or even ourselves, but the fundamental fact is true, and Admiral Blair said as much yesterday and said that the biggest concern that he had right now was almost a reputational one for the United States. He referred to how there was a, quote, increased questioning of U.S. stewardship of the global economy. Well, that's an understatement.
Well, you know, there's an irony there, because after 9/11, there was lots of propaganda out of al-Qaeda and al-Qaeda, you know, sound-alikes who wanted to bring down Wall Street. And there was a lot of talk about targeting Wall Street by blowing up the World Trade Center. The irony, of course, is, 8, 9 years, 10 years later, we've done it to ourselves economically. I'm wondering if there's a silver lining in the sense that certain terror organizations can say, see, we were right. It was fate that brought down the U.S. economy. And while they can take credit for what's happened to American prosperity, they're not necessarily going to do anything more about it.
Well, that would be an optimist viewpoint. You know, the other possibility is that they see America as more vulnerable and weaker and tired by Iraq and distracted by the economic crisis, and thus not truly seeking to go out and pursue them as thoroughly. And, you know, he mentioned, Admiral Blair mentioned, that, you know, it's also a problem with our allies. I mean, think about the next couple of months. You're going to have President Obama stepping out, trying to convince European allies, others, to step up the fight in Afghanistan and many other places. And what are they going to come back and say? We not only have a political problem with this, we now have an economic problem committing these forces.
So what does this mean? You know, law and order, when someone like Dennis Blair talks about law and order in, you know, marginal regimes around the United States, to a lot of people in the world, that means supporting dictators who are holding on with an iron fist in countries that are about to spring apart for various reasons. Does this argue for helping dictators or helping people who have a kind of ruthless hold on their countries or some other sort of policy?
Well, it may. It also argues for greater development work, you know, in the poorest parts of the world. And you're going to see in Congress, I think next week, the introduction of the bill for significant financing to begin to do rebuilding in the tribal areas of Pakistan. And one of the areas that he mentioned has gotten significantly worse. This is a bill that goes back to something that then-Senator Obama and then-Senator Biden and others introduced last summer. But imagine after we've just gone through what we're going to do, $800 billion tonight, right, on the fiscal stimulus. We have a banking plan that we're headed to that's probably going to be, you know, $2 trillion-plus. So the enthusiasm for committing significant funds and energy to the tribal areas of Pakistan is probably going to be pretty limited.
Right. One final point, and that is in a time of global economic crisis, doesn't that affect terrorist groups and guerrilla organizations as well, in that, you know, the Osama bin Ladens of the world are, you know, probably looking at their bank accounts? It's not as though they invested with Madoff, but they're probably looking at downturns just like everyone else.
You know, they may be. There are many who believe that actually what hurts them the most is the decline in the price of oil, because over the years, a lot of the extremist groups have been financed by people who benefit a lot when oil is high. And, you know, Denny Blair did have some good news. He said that he thought that al-Qaeda had probably suffered more in the past year from these predator strikes we've been doing than been hurt more than at any time since the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. But at the same time, he mentioned, you know, marginal countries. I mentioned North Korea before as an example of a country that could find itself so over the edge that the temptation to go out and sell their one major product, which in their case is their nuclear weapons technology, could be higher than ever.
So the incentive to actually get nukes into the mix probably goes up in a time like this when people are cash-starved.
People are always willing to pay for nukes. That's one of the things you learn about the black market. You know, AQ Khan got rich doing something, right?
Sure. We're gonna have to leave it there on that really optimistic note. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent of the New York Times and author of The Inheritance: The World Obama Confronts and Challenges to American Policy. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.